Hey everyone, welcome to the Naughty Shaman Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Carlisle, and I can't wait to dive in to a world where the sacred meets the wild and keeps things totally real. In each episode, we are going to dive into what it truly means to live a radiant life that is unapologetically real. And if you're ready to get started, so am I. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Naughty Shaman Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Carlisle, and I am excited to start to explore the magical world of being human. So, you know here at Naughty Shaman, my luminous warrior friends, that we like to explore not just the energetic nature of life. I can't wait until that series of podcasts come out because we're going to talk about all things energy system and cosmos. But before we go into these mystical places, I want to spend some time here in the human places because so many spiritual teachers and in the hands of junior varsity spiritual teachers, we are supposed to transcend our humanness. And what I love about shamanism and certainly our view of these sacred old practices combined with modern practices, that we need the human. We are human. For whatever reason, we chose to incarnate into these squishy bits of human flesh. And so we are here functioning in this human world with human desires and human failures and human flaws and all the squishy bits. And we simultaneously contain divinity, holiness, sacredness, wholeness within us. And so one of the things that we're going to explore in this podcast is how to be human and wrestle with the emotional parts of life. Because in my experience, what I see with so many spiritual seekers is that there is a spiritual bypass. There are so many ways to sort of try to overcome or bypass the hard part of spiritual work. And one of the biggest things that we see people try to bypass is the idea that they have to feel it to heal it, that you need to feel feelings. I know I said the F word. There are so many things in our culture, in our modern culture, where we have learned that feelings are not important. We are supposed to make only rational decisions. We are not supposed to bring our emotions to work. You are a woman, or even men, you are certainly coached not to cry at work. And so what has transpired in our modern culture is that we, in order to survive with our little squishy bits, have learned to compartmentalize, that we have a work self and we do just the work things over here. And then we have a home self and we do the home things here. And then we might have a spiritual self and we do spiritual things over there. And then we have a wild self, which is over here. And we fragment our experience of life in order to try to protect ourselves from feeling pain, specifically emotional pain or brokenheartedness. We are just fascinating creatures. So this compartmentalization can be really harmful. And I hear it all the time in Dharma school students when I say, how is the Dharma school journey going? And they'll say, oh, I haven't been doing anything. I haven't been sitting with my mace. I haven't been meditating. I haven't been praying. I haven't been being spiritual at all. And I love to say to them, like, have you been breathing? That's pretty spiritual. Have you been washing dishes? Have you been caring for people that you love? Have you been cared for by people that you love? Have you allowed that in? That's pretty spiritual shit. And it's good. And, you know, in our journey, the spiritually mature, the varsity, the spiritual adult doesn't want to get caught in these compartments because we strive, if anything, I don't even know if it's a strive. I think it's more of an allow. What we learn to allow is the breakdown of the walls that separate all these compartments of who we are. So, oh, you know what? I have a crystal here. This is a great way to explain it. And we talk about it in Dharma school a little bit. So it might be a refresher for some of you, but take a look at this Vogel crystal. Gorgeous, right? This one has so many sides, as you can see. And what we are remembering and allowing as we go deeper into this personal journey, this personal growth, is that we have all of these facets to who we are as a being. We are this. What has happened over our lifetime or lifetimes, if that's in your cosmology, is we've gotten covered with dust. So we've learned that only these two sides of ourselves are good. And the rest of this stuff, like, man, hide that in a closet because that shit is bad or scary or not good or even dangerous. And so we end up only living life with just this one or two little facets of who we are. And as we age and mature, we start to feel as if something is missing, because something is missing. Except for it's not a Porsche, it's not a new car, it's not a new job, it's not a new lover. Those things are not missing. What's missing is the full expression of who you are. That's what's missing. One of the things I like to talk about is, you know, the nature of a calling. What does it mean to have a calling? And does it mean I get a new job? Does it mean that's how I make money? No, no, no. Many philosophies, whether you're looking at Buddhism or Hinduism or the mystics in Christianity or Judaism or Muslim, the mystics, there's this idea in all of the mystical teachings that our souls came here on a journey of lesson learning, of advancement, of growth, of shedding the illusion that gums our eyes closed so that we can wake up and begin to see that, yes, in fact, this is who we are, a multifaceted, multidimensional, if you have that in your cosmology, being. So before we realize this, one of the compartments that we create to help us feel safe and comes back to bite us is our emotional life. So many times I'll be sitting with a client and talk about, oh, okay, so your boss said this, and how did you feel in that moment? And you know the answer I get? I felt okay. That's not actually an emotion. Okay is not an emotion, it's an idea. Or they'll say, I felt like tight in my chest. Also not an emotion, a physical experience. I felt wronged, also an idea. And so our language around emotions is just suffering. Many of us only have access to a handful of emotions that we can even talk about. And so this really rich part of our lives, where we source our personal power from, for many of us has gone into dormancy or is barely fed. It's like starving. This is a starving part of ourselves that is not fully brought into the light because we haven't allowed it to be. And so I want to talk about three emotions tonight, maybe more than that. We'll see how it goes. I don't want to keep you here too long, but I do want to talk about some of the big three emotions that can weigh us down and that most people have a tendency to shove away or to push down because we have strong learnings from our childhood that we are not supposed to feel these feelings, that anger, sadness, or fear, being afraid, that those things are bad. Don't be afraid, be brave. Don't cry, there's no monster in the closet. Be brave, buck up, buttercup. We have so many ways that we have learned how to not express these three emotions, anger, fear, sadness. So I'm going to share with you something that we teach in Dharma School called emotional deconstruction, where we want to take a look at this emotional experience that we call anger, and then break it down into its parts so that we can have a deeper, more nuanced distinctions about what that emotion means, what it has to teach us, why it comes, and what's the soul gift in it. So let's dive in. One of my favorites to work with is anger, because so many of us, including this, yours truly, have learned that expressing anger is a bad thing, either because when we saw somebody angry, it became violent. And so one of the things I want to uncouple in our idea of anger is that anger equals violence. It does not. That's an unhealthy expression of anger. Violence is an unhealthy expression of anger. Anger, in its purest form, is actually so sacred, one of the most sacred emotions that when it comes to visit us, it's worthy of spending time with. And here's why. If you can slow down enough to be awake and aware while you're angry, you're going to notice a couple of things. And here's what it is. When you are angry, whether you get cut off on the road, someone breaks a promise, what first happens is a physiological response where sometimes our hands will grip, There's tension in our body, and we tend to stand up a little bit straighter. Maybe, you know, I like to shake my fist or point my finger into the air like this sometimes when I'm angry. But there's a tension that comes in the body that's almost like, turn, hut, like makes us want to stand up tall. And there's an alertness, that like a focus, and a directive energy that comes with anger. Anger is typically directed somewhere. It's directed to a person, a situation, or a place, or something. And so that anger are like arrows shooting through our bodies, and it causes us to tense up and sit up straight. So that's the physiological experience of anger. It also can make us feel hot, like there's a heat that comes into the chest or the belly. Sometimes it feels like heartburn for people that don't express anger very readily. Sometimes that heat will churn and burn in their gut. Other times it causes our skin to flush red because there is an energy to it, a vitality to anger that, for instance, sadness does not have. Sadness has very little vitality. There's very little energy in the emotion of sadness. But anger, there's an energy to that. So that's the physiological response. The next thing that we want to take a look as we kind of break down anger, the next layer that we can break down to understand it and spend some time with it. The next time you're awake with anger, notice what has caused the anger. We know our thoughts. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know this, that our thoughts and our beliefs and our perspectives drive our emotional experience of life, which drives our biological experience of life, right? So mastering all these different realms is critical in the journey of becoming a whole expression of our cosmic human self. And so the thought or assessment that begins anger is typically something like this. It's the assessment that something unjust has happened, something unfair, something unjust has occurred. The idea of it should have been different, or it should be different, or I should be different, or they should be different, or it should be different. This idea of injustice shouldn't have happened. It's not fair. That's when we start to get the, it's hard to say it's not fair without clenching your fist, because that's the anger, or that's the biological response to this idea of having an injustice. So that's the next layer of kind of deconstructing, like, what is anger about? It's the assessment. When we're angry, we're assessing that something unfair has occurred. So that's a neat place of inquiry. You could be like, why am I angry? Where did something unfair happen? What am I assessing is unfair? One example might be when you're a child, if you're physically abused, having anger in that moment, even as a child without a cognition of what that is a natural and healthy response. Clenched little fists, want to punch someone, and then learn other things about anger. But in that case, that's unfair. That's an injustice that someone bigger is picking on someone little, and this is the person who's supposed to protect them. So this is an injustice. And this is where anger occurs naturally and it's healthy. The gift in anger is when we're awake, we can begin to see or ask ourselves, where has my boundary been breached? Like, think of an angry puma or a lion. Be like, okay, who's in my territory? What's going on? Did I not set a boundary there? Or did someone breach one of my boundaries? That's the gift of anger. It wakes us up. Like, wait, something in here is not okay with me. And this is a doorway for self-inquiry. What's not okay with me? And it's really not okay with me here, even though my mind is like, you should be okay with that, but it's not okay. So that's where we discover our boundaries, our values, who we are. Anger can teach us so much about our values, what we value, what are our boundaries. What's okay with us? What's not okay with us? Anger is such a precious gem of an emotion. So really, the cool thing about anger, and this is kind of like the deep golden nugget that we've been kind of rooting for down here, the soul gift inside anger and what it gives us is this is what unlocks our personal power. That third chakra sense of I am and I belong here. And I am worthy of taking up space. I am worthy to request what I need. I'm worthy of setting boundaries to keep myself safe and nurtured and warm and loved. So many people who suffer from this feeling of I'm not worthy or I'm not valuable in the world, anger and figuring out where have you learned to shut down anger. And bringing that online doesn't mean go call someone and scream at them. That's not how to express anger all the time, right? I mean, rarely is it. Rarely do you get anywhere like that. But feeling and acknowledging and discussing that anger with a wise person and really feeling the heat of it in your body and using that energy in a kickboxing class or a walk outside, or I like to walk and punch the air sometimes just to get it out. Punch a punching bag sometimes. These are healthy ways of expressing anger, getting that energy out of our body. Because if we try to hold and contain that anger down in our body, it can start to cause inflammation and all kinds of heat. Like, think about all that heat has to express itself outward. And if it doesn't, then it just festers inside. So my personal theory is it can cause a lot of inflammation. It can cause a lot of addictive personality things and binging and starving and all the things, because we're trying to control something that is actually pretty natural to move through us. Anger and all of these emotions move through us biologically in less than 20 minutes. You know, I like to say I run like a hot pan, like an ice cube on a hot pan. Like, I'll be like, God forsaken murder, shit, for sure, and about 3 or 5 minutes later, like, whew, the anger's out. Anger, precious gem of an emotion, right? Gives us our personal power. So let's deconstruct. Let me take a look at the time. I'm going to deconstruct one more. And I think the one that I'm going to go with right now is sadness. And then we'll talk about fear. So you kind of get what we're doing now. Now, sadness is another one of our friends. And when this friend comes, so many people are terrified of experiencing sadness, because there's sometimes a fear in people who have lived with depression or worked with depression personally, that if they allow themselves to feel sad, they will never stop. That the sadness will somehow, like a heavy wet blanket, take them down into the depths of the sea and drown them. And they'll never be heard from again. So many people have a fear or a judgment around feeling sad. And so create a super happy, super easy to get along with avatar of who themselves. And then again, they're only experiencing life with that one facet of, I'm so happy, I'm so easy to get along with, and I'm never sad, and I'm never anything that's difficult to deal with. Then they're only living a tiny, tiny facet of who they really are. And this can cause disruption in our system, including physical illness, mental illness, all the things. So sadness is sometimes that big monster in the closet that we don't want to talk about and we don't want to feel. Sadness, just like anger, is a precious gem. And you can learn to sit with sadness. Here's the physiological response you'll experience, is something along the lines of a deflation. A student last night said wilting. It feels like wilting physically, and I loved that. So wilting can occur in our energetic system, where the energy, our vitality, literally drains out of the system. It's like, there's an ache sometimes in the gut, like a gut punch, and maybe it feels like a hole is there. Sometimes it has tears that burn through the eyes, dryness in the mouth, and it just has a pain to it, like a dull ache through the whole body. So sadness physiologically is a lot like this. Not a lot of energy, very, like, no creative energy. You cannot create a life from a mood of sadness. It's very difficult. When sadness comes, that's a time to kind of cozy up with it in a nice warm blanket and start to deconstruct it so that you can ask yourself questions. So as we deconstruct sadness, okay, we got the physiological thing. The assessment that causes sadness, and this is so sweet, it's the assessment that we have lost something or someone that is very important to us. I can remember after my divorce, feeling really sad. And I, people that didn't do this work with me were like, well, why are you so sad? Like, this is, something that's going to change your life, and there's more freedom and your business and all these things. And I intellectually, yes, exactly. And still there was this sadness. And so I sat with it and I asked myself the question, what do I assess that I have lost? Like, what is my mind telling me that I've lost that was really important to me? And it was that sense of family was something that I had assessed I lost in this moment. And that's what was causing my heartache, right? It wasn't that I wanted to get back together. It was this loss of the family, the idea of what I thought family was going to be. So losing that was sad. I had sadness with that moment. So that's the gift of sad, or one of the assessments that creates the sadness, is that we have lost something that's important to us. When people die, you know, we lose that relationship, we lose that anchor, we lose that best friend, whatever it is, we lose that love, the hope of that love. Mm-hmm. And we do lose things in life, don't we? And I think about my kids and how, you know, as a parent, our instinct is to never let our kids be sad. Like, we don't want them to be sad. We don't want them to experience anything other than happiness their whole life, which is not life. And so when parents see their kids sad, it can be unnerving, because many adults don't know how to sit with sadness themselves. And so then when the kids have sadness because they lost a game, or they lost a grade that they were going for, or scholarship, or a friendship, or a relationship that was really important to them, that sadness is natural and it's healthy. And that moment of and lethargy is necessary. And the question is, what have you lost that's important? And then just honor that. Honor how important that was. You have to do that before you can kind of move on. So many people want to skip that part. Be like, okay, I was sad about that, but look over there. And they haven't really felt the sadness yet. So to dig a little deeper into the sadness, this is another thing. So sadness teaches us, this is kind of the intellectual gift, sadness teaches us what's important to us. It teaches us about our values. It teaches us about what matters to us and who matters to us. And then deep down in the gold nugget, the soul gift, is compassion. If you've had sadness, if you've lost in your life, often our heart softens. Sometimes we can become bitter. People can become bitter when they've had loss. But if you're listening to this podcast, you're on a path of continuing to stay open to all of life's experience. Instead of closing off and becoming bitter, you're going to stay open through the sadness and just feel it and let it kind of run through you. I'm sad. I'm with sadness today. And it will pass through your system. It will pass through your system just like everything else, because it's driven by a thought. And the thought is, I've lost something important to me. And most of the time, we're not aware of our thoughts. And so this is why deconstructing emotions is so valuable. It's like one of the things that we teach in Dharma school again and again and again and again, because we don't learn it in school. I don't know why. We should. Because then we would actually have adults leading businesses and countries and things like this, emotional and soulful adults, rather than spiritual children still operating out of greed and competition and compartmentalization. So as we are on our journey to wholeness, we want to break down the compartments between our emotional life, our spiritual life, our work life, our love life, like all these things, our life. These are all aspects of who we are. Cool. And then the last emotion that I just want to deconstruct is fear, because that's another, in so many spiritual circles, they're like, oh, release the fear, have no fear. You don't want fear. Fear is like, you don't want any fear. And fear is so sacred. Oh my gosh. Well, and it's been programmed into us biologically, because it saved our asses back in the day where we were running away from mammoths and things like that. So fear is embedded in our biology and through the amygdala in the back part of our brain that kind of drives this fight or flight mechanism that we have. So it is a mechanism that we have to survive. So great for survival, really bad for thriving. So if you've got like $1 in your bank account and fear comes, awesome, because you're in survival mode. Fear is helpful. It's going to motivate your ass to get busy and start paying attention. So let's deconstruct fear and see, what are the gifts inside of fear? And when it comes to visit, what's it all about? So fear is coming to visit. And this is fear. Like, there are so many different, there's like diet fear, like anxiety and worry and stress. And like, fear comes in a lot of shades of gray. So whether it's big fear, like terror, or just like a little bit of like stress fear, fear has many shades of gray. So this is about the same for all the shades of gray in fear. So with fear, the assessment, or the biological thing that takes us up there, you know, that sweaty hands, hot, pumping heart, breathing, shallow, rapid breathing, either a freeze response, a fight response, a feed response, and overeat. I got to get out of here. That's just another way to run, to distract yourself. So a lot of, you know, addictive behaviors can come with fear when it's not processed. So fear, those are the physiological symptoms and signs of fear. And then when we take a look at what's the thought or the assessment in life that creates that, Fear is essentially that we have assessed something like this. As we look into the future, something we care about is going to get taken away. Something important is going to get taken away. It's like sadness. Sadness is looking in the rearview mirror. I have already lost something important to me is sadness. The assessment of fear is I'm going to lose something important to me in the future. It's almost predictive. I'm going to lose it. No. We have no idea of knowing the future. So fear comes when we do that. The other assessment is fear is when you look into the future and think and assess that you are not going to be able to handle what's coming. Like, I'm not going to be able to handle that anxiety. So this is where it comes from. This assessment of I'm going to lose something important or I'm not going to be able to handle that. I'm not competent. So that's a beautiful place for self-inquiry, because as you look to the future, this is what I always like to play games when I have fear. I'm like, am I 100% certain? I Byron Katie that shit, you know, am I 100% certain that that's true? Well, no, there's like 8,000 different possibilities than the horror story going on in my mind this moment. So that usually takes it down a notch, that self-inquiry of is that story I'm telling myself that I am going to lose something important to me? Am I 100% sure that that's true? Am I 100% sure that I'm not going to be able to handle that? Who might support me? How could I learn that skill? So the self-inquiry is the beautiful thing that starts to transmute that emotion rather than just ignore it and shove it down. So that's the assessment that causes the fear. So what's cool is the gift in fear. Oh my gosh, the gift in fear is great, because what fear does when it runs through our system, it makes us go and open our eyes really wide so that we can see what we've been missing. So we can see what we've not been paying attention to. You wake up in the morning and you're not sleeping and you're like, I look in the future and I know I'm going to lose all my money. What am I going to do about it? Heart's racing, anxiety all the time. Money, not enough. Won't be enough. So rather than just staying in that place, if you can be awake and sit with fear about money, let's say, you can go, okay, let's look at what I've been ignoring. How much money do I have? How much money do I make? How much money do I spend? How much money can I spend differently? How can I do this? How can I shift numbers around? What is possible for me to start creating different story about money now in the present? So we have to shift our present moment. So fear has that gift of waking up and looking at the details that we've been overlooking in our lives. Think about a health scare, the last health scare that maybe you experienced either for you or a loved one. That shit will wake you up. You're going to be like, you know, got a lump. Oh my God, what if it's cancer? Now you're really awake and you're looking at your health habits and you're like, damn, I might need to get off the couch. I might have to stop eating this. I might have to start doing that. I might need to quit smoking. I might need to do that. In the present, the human change, the human actions we take with our spiritual insights is what matters. Because if we just have these really cool spiritual insights and then do not make change in our human present moment, then it's wasted. These spiritual insights are just then wasted. If we're not using them to open our mind, open our heart, open our expression of who we are, to start to uncover all the facets that we've talked about. So we use our spiritual insights in this process of sacred inquiry or self-inquiry to start to uncover and dust off all these different parts of who we are at our essence, which is whole and quite lovely and rainbowy and colorful and wonderful. This is what's underneath the flesh of us, one of my teachers used to say. So this is why I love talking about these emotions, and you can do this with any emotion, especially you can do it with love and the assessment of this is creating good feelings and there is potential for future here. There's potential for trust and safety here. That's the assessment of love, is there's safety and trust in this relationship. How juicy is that? So deconstructing these emotions can be really enlightening and start to take you out of panic mode when you start to feel the discomfort of some of them, especially anger, sadness, and fear. So I hope that some of these tools were helpful. And, you know, if you can re-listen to it, take notes if you want to, and remember some of the questions that will take you into your own experience. Because remember, the spiritual path is not about not feeling pain. Biggest misconception of all this spiritual stuff in this wild, wild world of new age gooey stuff that's out there. Most of it's a bunch of crap because it is trying to sell something that is impossible, which is elation, happiness all the time. The only thing you can do to have that is like get a lobotomy or do drugs for the rest of your life. And that will not be a whole life. It will be just a couple of facets, which is cool if that's what you want. If you want that, then by all means, enjoy the hell out of that. And if you're searching for a whole expression of life, then sitting with these emotions can really create a depth and a richness, because as you get stronger, you build that emotional muscle to identify and understand your own feelings as you go through life as a human, then you will be able to hold that much more space in a world that desperately needs to come down out of fear, come through anger, and begin to understand it differently. Yeah, the goal of a spiritual life is not to miss out on pain, to not get sick ever, to not, you know, even the best gurus go through periods of time like that. The spiritual life is one that is fully open and available to all that's here in this human existence. It's like full frontal life. No, that's not it. Full contact. Full frontal, watching Magic Mike or something like that. I don't know. So yeah, full contact life, right? Full contact life. Because we have something so precious the short time we're here. It's these senses, this sense of being alive and the ability to be aware of what we are sensing. Like, what a kick. It's crazy. You can spend hours just feeling wind on your skin. It's pretty awesome. But not lately, because it's like 30 degrees outside. I'm just kidding. Even that's lovely. These polar bear people are jumping in the ocean this time of year. It's wild. It's wild down here at the beach this time of year. People, sea people are sea people, and they're all in the ocean right now. So it's kind of funny. Well, my loves, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Nani Shaman podcast. I'm Natalie Carlisle. I'm so glad that you stayed to listen. I hope that you understand a little bit more about anger and sadness and fear and what it has to offer you and why they can be such good friends in your life. So next time we get together, I am going to be talking about how you know you need a shaman, like what's going on in your life and why it's time to start going into the deeper examination of life with a soulful guide, like a shamanic coach. So that's where we're headed next, and I cannot wait to talk to you. We're also going to have some episodes about financial realness, and I can't wait to share that with you. All right, my loves. Have a peaceful, wonderful, radical, wild, have whatever kind of day you're having, and I will see you on the flip side. If you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, we are so grateful. Please reach out to us. Let us know what topics you'd like to see covered in our future episodes. Get in touch in the comments, because we love to hear from you. And you can reach us on social media.